I'm HRN's Communications Director Kat Johnson with a preview of this week's episode of Meat and Three.
I think we should realize that we more or less have a broken food system. When 800 million of us go to bed hungry, 600 million are obese, we waste 30% of our food, then something is fundamentally wrong.
We'll introduce you to one food waste solution happening in Asia.
They introduced this system where residents were issued an electronic ID card that would open an automated bin and enable them to weigh the food waste being dropped off. And then they would be charged, you know, in a certain amount of money for the weight of that food.
And we'll take a look at some of the real struggles happening closer to home.
How is it possible that a meal that was perfectly fine to consume at 10:59 p.m. then becomes waste at 11 p.m.
So tune in to this week's Meat and Three on Heritage Radio Network, available wherever you listen to podcasts.
Hi, everybody. You're listening to Radio Cherry Bomb, and I'm your host, Carrie Diamond. Each week, we bring the pages of Cherry Bomb magazine to life through conversations with the most inspiring women in and around the world of food. First, let's thank our sponsors, Le Cordon Bleu. If you're daydreaming about culinary school, maybe it's time to say bonjour to Le Cordon Bleu. Learn more about the legendary culinary school's most prestigious professional qualification, Le Grand Diplôme, by visiting Cordon Bleu. .edu. And let's thank Vital Farms pasture-raised eggs. Vital Farms pasture-raised eggs are better than cage-free. They are bull-free. Try for yourself. To get your coupon for Vital Farms pasture-raised eggs, head to vitalfarms.com/cherrybomb. And Bob's Red Mill. Bob's Red Mill is an employee-owned company that's been offering organic, gluten-free, and stone-ground products for decades. You know, with Bob's Red Mill, you're not just getting quality, you are getting flavor-packed food that tastes amazing. Go to bobsredmill.com and use the code CHERRYBOMB25 for 25% off your order. So, Cherry Bomb University starts tomorrow. We're kind of losing our minds here at Cherry Bomb HQ. It's at the Food and Finance High School in Manhattan. That's the city's only culinary high school. Ticket prices start at $50, and there are only a couple left, so be sure to get yours now at cherrybomb.com. We have so many amazing classes on Saturday and Sunday, and so many incredible professors, a lot of whom you've heard on this show. Jody Berg, the CEO of Vitamix, is actually teaching a class. I'm sure some of you remember her show. That was actually one of my favorites. She actually went back to school and got a special degree in how to help people like pursue their passion, which is so incredible. So she'll be teaching about that. We've got Bonap's Emily Schultz, who'll be teaching everybody some social media secrets. Bonap crushes it on the Instagram game, so I'm excited to learn from Emily. Oh my gosh, so many others. Clancy Miller, you've heard Clancy co-host. She is teaching how to write and test recipes the right way. A lot of people don't realize there is a right way to write and test a recipe. I learned that the hard way when we did the Cherry Bomb cookbook. I wish I had taken Clancy's class in advance. And then we also have Jen Pelka. And that was one of our most popular shows of the year. Jen came on and talked about how she raised $650,000 from 33 different women to open her champagne bar, The Riddler, in San Francisco. And I know a lot of you listened because a lot of you emailed about that show. So Jen will be teaching all about that on Sunday. So just go to cherrybomb.com, check out the different classes and tracks and prices. We've got lots of options for everybody. Hope to see you this weekend. Today's guests are Julie Mountain and Dana Norley. Julie and Dana call themselves the Thelma and Louise of granola. Obviously, that's without driving off the cliff part. They are the co-founders and CEOs of the Granola Bar, a local chain of modern diners throughout Connecticut and Westchester, where you can get anything from avocado toast to a frozen hot chocolate to their fantastic homemade granola. Dana and Julie drove all the way from their home base in Westport, Connecticut, to the Wing in Dumbo to record this episode, and I couldn't be happier they came. They are an absolute riot, and they are such amazing business people whose unconventional paths left me feeling inspired about flipping the script when it comes to running and growing a company. I hope you enjoy my conversation with them as much as I did. We will be right back after this word from Le Cordon Bleu. Are you daydreaming about culinary school again? Make this the year your dreams become reality with Le Cordon Bleu, the legendary culinary school. Study classic French culinary techniques in cuisine and patisserie as part of their exclusive 9-month Le Grand Diplôme and graduate into a world of opportunity. You also can extend your course of studies to include culinary management and dedicated internships. Le Cordon Bleu has locations in more than 20 countries around the world and located within some of the best food cities out there: London, Ottawa, Madrid, Bangkok, Tokyo, and of course, the spiritual home of cuisine and Le Cordon Bleu, Paris. Turning your daydreams into reality is closer than ever. Visit cordonbleu.edu for more and let your culinary adventure begin. So we are here with Julie and Dana, and I literally could not be more excited. And I know I say that about every guest. And I do mean it. But you two, I met you and I liked you instantly. It was like love at first sight.
It really was. It was mutual.
I couldn't believe I didn't know you before. I couldn't believe you hadn't been part of the Bomb Squad since Cherry Bomb had been born. But we're making up for lost time really quickly. And I'm just thrilled to welcome you both to Radio Cherry Bomb.
Thank you. This is great to be at the Wing. Great to be in Brooklyn. Very exciting.
You drove all the way from Connecticut.
We did, which sounds like a very far journey because it is. It was like 2.5 hours in rush hour.
Yeah, it was, you know, an hour for 14 miles, but it was so worth it.
And do you know how many times I've wanted to stop to see you both? But by the time you're on the Connecticut Turnpike, whoever you're in the car with, they're like, we're not stopping.
Once we open 50 or 60 stores, we'll send a helicopter for you. And I think that's the only way to go. Let's be honest.
Sometimes you'll stop in New Haven to get pizza.
Right.
But even that, you have to be hungry.
You have to be dedicated.
And dedicated. Yeah. Exactly.
Sort of. We do have 2 locations in Westchester, which makes it a little more palatable. That's only, 30 minutes from here?
Yeah, you should come to our Rye location. Yeah. You can actually take the train directly to our store.
Yeah, there you go. There's a pitch.
So,
Rye location.
Okay, excellent. So let's start at the beginning, like we usually do. How did you two meet?
Oh, 1970. No. We have to jump then to our suburban existence because we both had really robust lives in the city, both of us individually for 16 years, meaning we didn't live together at the time. We both moved out. When did we move out, Dan?
2008.
Yeah, we moved out.
Moved out
to Westport.
Yeah, out of your parents' house?
No, funny. We did that journey to the burbs in 2008.
Yeah, we did that thing. We had careers. We got married. We had kids. We left the city because it became challenging. And I don't want to speak for Julie, but
you can.
I think she would agree with me. We both really kind of pine to be back in the city.
So. Oh, you're meaning now?
Especially being
at the Wing. Yes. But when you go back to 2008, you have 2 women who had never met, kind of experiencing the same thing. So we had both, like to Dana's point, had careers in the city.
What were your careers?
I was in the music business for a while.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah, and Dana was in finance.
I was in finance.
And
what did you do in music?
Kind of everything. I started at a place called Irving Plaza. I was 18 years old, and I was working there and going to NYU. And I don't know which one feels more part-time. I think it was NYU. And then I moved on to Atlantic Records and some personal management and kind of did a 360 of the music business.
So cool. Can you name drop a few of the acts you worked on?
That's
a hard word to say, acts.
Name drop, you would actually cry because it would age me immediately.
Wait, I think I'm older than you.
No, if I was like Edwin McCain, Tori Amos.
Wait, I love Tori
Hootie
Amos.
And the
I saw Tori Amos' first show in the city. Maybe it was at Irving Plaza. She was on the piano.
She was on the piano. Yeah,
the Little Earthquakes tour.
Yeah.
Just aged myself.
We're going back to early 90s.
Yes. Music Street Cred.
Yeah, I was at Atlantic Records at a time when a fax, if anyone out there needs to Google that, go for it. But a fax came in and said, we really need to have a meeting to corporate. You know, we need to have a meeting about this thing called Napster. And my boss at the time was like, you can rip that up. I'm not interested. So, yeah, there's that.
I'm going to rat out Jess for a second, but when we were in the office the other day, Jess, our associate producer and radio intern, said, how did you get anything done back like in the days?
It's a fair question.
Yeah. And I was like, that is a great question. And I had to explain to the team what, remember periodical research?
Of course.
That book, you would go to the library and take that out.
The index cards?
And look up, yeah. And you would get microfiche.
Yeah.
I had to explain to them what a microfiche. I sounded like I was 100.
But I think we had more hours in the day because we were not attached to our mobile devices. I think there were just more hours in the day that we were doing things. So maybe we got more done. I don't know. Dan, what did you do in your old life?
In my old life, I was in finance. I worked on a trading desk, and I traded international equities. It was a very exciting time. I was there from 1996 until 2008 when I left the city. And I worked with the same team for about 10 years straight. So it was a great time in my life. I look back on it very fondly. I remember when I was doing it, it felt very high pressured and all that good stuff. But I feel like now is definitely more high pressured, owning my own business. And there are days when I kind of crave the lifestyle of working for someone else and, you know, getting that guaranteed paycheck and the routine of it.
Same. Every now and then I'm like, what was I thinking? Mm-hmm. Why did I leave those jobs? But ultimately, and we'll get to this, it's more rewarding.
Yes,
to
absolutely.
Do your own thing. Yeah.
Absolutely.
How many kids do you each have?
Funny. So
I'll let Julie go first here.
Overachiever. So I have two children and I married a man with four children. So we together have six. Three girls and three boys, but I gave birth to two girls. They're now 9 and 11, and I have four steps.
So it's Brady Bunch-ish?
Yeah, they're 7 to 16 years old.
Wow.
No pressure at all.
And I have a 13-year-old son and 11-year-old boy-girl twins, and that actually can bring us right to how Julie and I met, which was at a birthday party that our daughters were seated next to one another. We didn't know each other. They didn't know each other. And we kind of struck up a conversation, you know. The way it worked is the kids are sitting at a table, they've had an activity, and now they're having some pizza, and the moms are sort of corralled around on the outside, and it's kind of like a bar scene, right? You're like looking for someone to talk to.
Kind of awkward, actually, when you think about the kids are eating pizza and the moms are just standing there,
right?
I'm just standing here. Yeah. Yeah, I don't know what I'm doing.
So we struck up a conversation, and it was very natural.
Yeah, I was actually asking her how to get my child to eat the pizza. I'm like, look how delicious that looks. Why won't she eat it? So we started talking about food, and my gut immediately was, I like this person. We're not friends. She seems to be so kind and so present. Wow, maybe she'll work with me. It was my immediate thought was we could work together. Because like I said, at the time, when you look back, we had had careers, which I didn't know anything about her yet, but we had both had careers. We had both given them up to raise our children, and then we're in the suburbs. Kind of, we didn't know that we were both looking around and seeking, but we were both seeking. And so I asked her to have lunch to talk about an idea that I had had for hobby, that terrible word, hobby.
So when you left your jobs in the city and moved out to the suburbs, mm-hmm. was it hard? I mean, that was a big piece of your identity that you were leaving behind.
It was terrifying. Also exciting. I don't know that I understood the support that I was going to need to do that and what kind of emotional trauma it was going to have on me. Because now all of a sudden I was looking to my children and to my husband to kind of give me more than they really should. I don't know if that sounds kind of appropriate, but I really didn't understand the value of exercising my brain in that way. But in the time, I thought, what a joy. I've been working since I'm 17. What a wonderful blessing to be able to stop working. And I saw it as an opportunity and something, honestly, to try on, right? Like I can always shift and, you know, ultimately we'll get to how I shifted. But Dana, did you have...
Yeah, I had a difficult time with it. I did not anticipate those feelings. I was very excited about my new venture, my, you know, leaving the city and moving into a home and being part of a new community. I really felt like I was not part of a community when I was in New York, which is one of the benefits of being in New York, but especially with young children, because I was a working parent, I really had very little connection and very little community sense. So I was looking forward to the opportunity to be part of a community and to make some real friends. And I had felt like since college, I really, you know, outside of my colleagues, I didn't have a big social existence.
I think it also changed for me when I had my second daughter. Not that it would have been different, because it isn't for Dana. She has two sons and a daughter. But for me, as a stay-at-home mom with two daughters, I felt, oh my gosh, what am I going to do now? What do I show them? How do I show them how to be everything, right? There was this real weight to that job. The job of parenting, I wasn't prepared for either. You know, there's this paradigm of you're in the city and you have a decent job and you get married and then you have children, and there's this real domino effect that very few of us really stop and think, is that what I want, right? Like, and so by the time I had had both of my daughters, and thank goodness, I really was very reflective and very, it was a really personal moment of, wow, now what? Now that was all going on inside of my head when I met Dana. And I think it was just kind of, our people would say beshert, but like very meant to be, that I met someone, you know, in a similar state, just kind of looking around. And at the time when I met Dana, I said, do you work? Do you? And she's like, well, I'm going to say it. I'm thinking about selling Nu Skin. And I looked at her and I was like, Well, I know about that, and that's extraordinarily successful. And actually, our joke is she might have made a lot more money had she stayed on that path. So who was I to interrupt that path? But I thought, why don't we create something? Instead of join something that already exists, how would you feel about creating something? Sorry to jump ahead if that's what I'm doing.
And your first business was born.
Yes.
Yeah.
Tell us about the first business.
Oats Granola. It was born in 2010. Pretty shortly after we met.
Yeah, very shortly.
Yeah, Julie came to me and said, Julie had done some traveling and she came back from her trip and she said, oh, I had the most delicious granola when I was on vacation.
Probably sounded like that,
yeah,
too.
No, it was so
where
good.
Where did you vacation?
Can't tell you. That's top secret. No, because, you know, I was on the West Coast, which I'm very attached to, just the beauty of the Northern West Coast, Northern
Well, you look
California.
Like a California girl.
Do I?
You do.
Goals.
Golden, no, golden blonde. Yes.
Goals met. That. No, I'm like Jewish from Long Island. Nobody's ever said that to me, ever. Like, that's the funny. Where are you? Like, someone says, where are you from? And then the people next to me go, really? You had to ask?
Thank
but,
you.
Well, thanks. Wow.
So,
no, I had traveled. I was like, oh, look, you know, there's this, I thought there was this white space in giftable, high-end, beautiful granola. Like, the Bergdorf of granola. So I pitched that to Dana.
And Dana, you said?
Well, I first
to
I
hell
I,
with
I
skincare.
Yeah. First I said I need to try it, right? I'm not going to endorse something or get behind something that I don't enjoy. So the first batch was made and it was really delicious. Really, really delicious. In fact, it still exists.
So the granola was great.
It was really delicious.
Life-changing.
It must have been really good.
It was really good, and I was so happy to not only endorse it, but, you know, be a part of it. So we...
And Dana was a wee bit more popular than I was. And I don't mean that in any kind of shock.
I think it's because I had an older child.
Okay, fair.
So I was, you know, we were in school age by that time with him. And Julie was just, you know...
I think it's because she's nicer advantage. Than me. but I think Dana is just a beautiful person, and she had a network of people. So the first call of business was like, hey, Dana, you know a lot more people than I do. All jokes aside, I was like, can you see if people like this? And so immediately we had this great reaction from Dana's friends just about how delicious it was. So we thought, okay, maybe we have something. So I went to the local farm market in Westport. We should fast forward or else we're going to be here till 2020. But we went to the local farm market and the gentleman there said, great, I'll take a few cases. What's the name of the company and how much is it? And I called Dana and I was like, what's a case? What does he mean by a case? What is that?
We had to use the Google.
And what's a case?
That's crazy.
What
did
is
you
it
even
called?
Have like one of those cottage industry licenses
what?
Or something?
Yeah, yeah okay. No, we had nothing.
Are
we,
you? What?
We were making it
what
in
are
our
you
kitchen.
Talking about?
Oh.
No, it was.
Just doing it.
We're
oh,
just doing
yeah,
it.
Okay.
We were buying the ingredients.
I think we wore gloves.
Retail.
Retail, right.
And
right.
then we were making everything in her kitchen.
Yeah.
Cost in
of
between,
goods, 100%.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
We were buying the most expensive honey they had.
Yeah.
And we wanted it to be delicious. That was what we were seeing.
Right. Yeah. But we really fell into it. And then all of a sudden, I mean, we'll fast forward a bit, but we just realized that we had this great working relationship. Like, who – I mean, we cared about granola, but in a way, it was this – dynamic friendship that was being born. And people would say to us, oh, you don't, you know, I do this voice. It's terrible. I shouldn't do it for the people. But it's like, you know, you work with your friend. You can't work with your friend. And I'm like, she's not my friend. We just met. And I think there was this real birth of just two women that had this crazy appetite for work. So here we were with like no idea what a case was. I mean, we have to.
And a crazy passion for food that I think neither one of us had really tapped into. You know, like we were both in different industries and we like to go out to eat, but we had like a real passion for food.
And culturally, we realized that we both lived in homes growing up that used food to soothe.
Comfort.
And used food to comfort. And we had similar grandmas, we came to understand, that like had seven proteins on, you know, at Friday night dinner. Who needs seven proteins?
Dana, where did you grow up?
I grew up in Connecticut, actually.
Okay. So, okay, I'm going to fast forward you. So, no apologies. This is amazing.
We apologize about everything. Yeah. Or I do.
That's We're working on that.
That's what I do in emails now. I just say, I'm sorry a million times.
Yeah. It's workshop terrible. At the wing Can about the wing over-apologizing.
There could be. We should probably do that at Cherry Bomb University.
Yes.
Yeah.
This is Jess. Jess, tell us what you learned.
The big thing that I learned is that never say sorry. Well, say sorry if you need to say sorry, obviously. But like, don't say sorry. Say thank you. Mm. So it's like, thank you for letting me collect my thoughts.
I say both.
That's good.
Thank you.
It's too late for me, Jess. You're
I'm going to have to reprogram.
There's hope for you, Jess, but there's no hope for me.
Yeah.
There's definitely hope for you. It's good, though, because I think saying thank you keeps things positive. So it's less like this is a problem.
Thank you.
Yes. Thank you.
Thanks, Jess.
Yeah. Thank you, Jess.
All right. And you too. I'm sorry. So.
Thank you for saying you're sorry. So, and I'm sorry.
So we're gonna leap forward. So there's a huge difference between your cottage granola, illegal cottage granola industry.
Oh, stop it, Carrie.
Versus opening your first retail.
Oh, yes. Yeah. Okay,
spot.
You want us to get there. Yeah. We have to get
there. No. I'm not saying I want you to get there, but it's just such a leap. How did you make that leap?
It is a leap.
It's a huge leap. So, and it deals with, you know, a lot, right? So during this time, we were kind of making ends meet with this granola company. It was wholesale. It was very difficult. We didn't know what we were doing. And even apparently, if you do, it's very difficult to be in the consumer goods business.
It's a tough business. And it's our particular item, granola, was, you know, a crowded space. You go to Whole Foods and there's 32 different local granolas. So it wasn't like we had this unique product that, you know, we could get into every Whole Foods in the country.
And even if we could, we weren't sure we wanted to, because if you multiply a million bags by zero profit, you have zero.
And the math was not working.
No, like people said, oh, it's a volume business. And I was like, not if you keep multiplying it by zero. It's not interesting. And so we had a mentor at actually Dannon, and they had opened a concept store in the city that we found very interesting. We were making bulk granola for them. And someone at that store said to us, they worked for Dannon Corporate, what if you turned your manufacturing around? What if you, at your hometown of Westport, Connecticut, that you basically, you know, opened up kind of a manufacturing facility so that you took back all of that contract manufacturing, you know, profit that you were giving away. We went to look at space in Westport, our hometown. We found a space.
And that made sense to you as a concept? It set a light bulb
off? No. Not
initially. I think it was more that we could do the manufacturing, and, you know, he also suggested, well, you could have like a little cafe out front. And when we were being reflective of how we ate and our lifestyle, and, you know, we were entrepreneurs. We didn't have an office. We didn't have a headquarters. So we were kind of bouncing around, and we would often work out of one of our homes, and we would make ourselves, you know, quinoa bowls or avocado toast or egg bowls. And when we really were being reflective, we thought, well, you know, there's not really a place in our town where we can eat like this. We struggle. We struggle to eat out the way that we want to eat.
And on the human side of it, which obviously the food is, but on the hospitality side, both Dana and I were looking for a joyous, connected place to be, which, you know, being in the wing actually kind of feels like that. When you're in the suburbs, there's a real kind of availability to create something like that. As suburban women at the time, there was no place we could go and kind of feel happier leaving than when we came in. And for Dana and I, we knew that people like us would want to feel connected. And we were going to the same places every day for years and eating lunch and breaking a 20 to eat lunch. And we still didn't get eye contact or, hey, Julie, how are you? Or there was really nothing there. And we missed that about the city, like my local
place. The energy.
Yeah. And having kind of come out of the music business, I was so passionate about brand. So all of these things kind of converged. Being also in a tough place personally, I was looking for a place to kind of...
An outlet
and a place to call home that was beautiful and surrounding myself with joyous, happy people. And so when this gentleman at Dannon said to us, hey, you can have a front of house. We looked at each other, we're like, what's a front of house? Very reminiscent of what's a case, you know?
Yeah.
What's a front of house? We don't know what that is. We've only ever ordered in. And here we were attempting to kind of make granola in the back and have a front of house, whatever that meant in the front. So we sat down at my kitchen with all of these ideas, both about brand and connectedness and joy and food being the vessel, right, for the joy. And we wrote a menu. Absolutely without clue how that would translate to a restaurant.
And we were in denial that it was actually a restaurant for quite some time. Even after we opened, we say, oh, we have a little cafe. And someone would say, you know, that's a restaurant.
Yeah. Yeah.
But so at any point, did you hire a consultant?
Yes. No.
Did
no.
You,
yes. No. Yes.
Sorry. Well, yes. Thank you. No.
We hired a chef to help with our menu just because, you know, we didn't know what we were doing.
Yeah, we had an idea that you shouldn't have one item with like roasted peppers on it, right? We had an idea that sounded like a bad idea and we knew we wanted to make money, right? This is the difference is we had gone into this hobby of granola kind of, you know, as stay-at-home moms. All of a sudden we were turning into businesswomen and we were like, you know what? Nothing is going to be multiplied by zero anymore because that just doesn't work. And as apologetic in a way as we wanted to be about making money. Yes. We decided, well, wait, you know, we need to ask somebody how to write a menu where this can be profitable.
Not so, just a menu, but a business plan.
Yeah, we got some help. We got a pro forma to look at and thank goodness. And then that's it, though.
Wait, what does that mean?
A pro forma. It's
should know that.
It's the assumptions you're making about your business looks like a budget and or P&L. So you're just making assumptions.
What's the difference between that and the business plan?
You would have a pro forma inside of your business plan. But if someone wants to email or comment and tell me that I'm wrong, that's totally okay, too.
The person who still has not written a business plan, but I'm going to.
Right. So yeah. So a pro forma would look like your year, and you'd say, okay, 100 people are going to walk in between these hours. They're going to spend this many dollars. Then we have all of these expenses below. What is our EBITDA at the end of the day, our net income, right? So it was over our heads, but at the same time, not really. We were businesswomen before, you know, and here we went. Yeah. And so we signed a lease.
But we should, you know, contribute to the story here that right before we signed the lease, we had I don't know if you want to call it a female moment.
No, I was about
moment.
To say it. No, don't do that.
It was a moment.
We had a complete Thelma and Louise panic attack. It would be like at the end of the movie if Thelma and Louise stopped before they went off the cliff and looked at each other and then looked at the camera and said, wait,
we're not going to do this.
Do you want to do this?
No, I don't want to
No, actually,
this.
I'm good. You good? I'm good. So we called everyone. We're like, we're just kidding.
We called the architect.
We called the broker.
We called everybody.
And we said, kidding. Did we sign a lease?
We're just kidding. No, we're not happening.
Actually,
not happening.
Sorry. We thought that would no. And then we drove to the beach. We have a lovely little waterfront in Westport. It's beautiful. And we sat there and we had cried, both of us individually, for days. And we're not ashamed to say it. We grieved the idea that we had just dissolved.
Yeah.
Dana looked at me and she said, I'm going to be more sad that we didn't do it. And we then got back in the car. And you know when like you get back in the car on the cliff, Thelma and Louise, and like you don't have that runway to fly the car and you just push the gas and it falls off. Yeah, that was us. We just got back in the car and hit the gas and it was like, okay, so here we went.
Yeah.
And
that was almost 5 years ago. We have our fifth anniversary coming up December 7th.
It's no longer, you know, a wing and a prayer when you really dive into math. this is an algorithm, right? Not to take the romance out of it. But, you know, how to get to those numbers is all about the hospitality and the warmth and the happiness that we serve. And that's really what we're serving is happiness. But once we realized that we could figure out this algorithm, then we knew we could open more stores and they would work.
We're going to take a short break and we'll be right back with Julie and Dana after this word from our sponsors. Does this happen to you? You need a dozen eggs, you go to the supermarket, you head to the egg section, and you are so confused by what you find there, you freeze. You want nice eggs on hand because maybe you want a cheese and herb omelet for dinner, or you want to poach an egg to slip on your avocado toast, and you know quality eggs make a big difference. And you're a decent person, so it's important the chickens have a good life. But as you stand there, you think to yourself, I have no idea what all these words on the egg cartons mean. So you shrug, pick one, and continue shopping. Stop right there. You are a busy lady. You don't need this bull in your life. You need bull free eggs, which is where Vital Farms pasture-raised eggs come in. Their pasture-raised hens roam outside in 108 square feet of space per hen. Those cage-free hens, they never go outside. I tasted the difference once I tried Vital Farms eggs. Try for yourself. To get your coupon for Vital Farms pasture-raised eggs, head to vitalfarms.com/cherrybomb. It's time for our Bob's Red Mill Minute. With all this granola talk, my associate producer Jess and I got to talking about the different types of Bob's Red Mill granolas out there. Isn't that right, Jess?
We sure did, Carrie. Did you know that Bob's Red Mill has 9 different types of delicious granola?
9 types? That's a lot of granola.
I don't think there's such a thing as too much granola.
Of the 9, which one would you be, Jess?
I think I would be the honey almond granola. Not only do I love having nuts in my granola, but I love anything with honey. Food, lotion, drink, whatever. You name it. Plus, the Bob's Red Mill Honey Almond Granola has a hint of vanilla in it, which adds a little something extra, and I often feel a little extra myself. How about you, Carrie? Which Bob's Red Mill granola would you be?
You know the answer, Jess. I would be the classic granola.
Come on, Carrie. That's boring. You gotta choose again.
Well, come on, Jess. You know I'm boring. All right, but fine. I'll be the apple blueberry granola because it has dried apples in it, which I love, and it's fall, and because it's lightly sweetened, which is very important to me when it comes to breakfast. I don't really like super sweet breakfasts. When I was a kid, I literally ate like sugar smacks for breakfast every day, and these days my tastes are really different. You know what I do love for breakfast, Jess?
What, Carrie?
I love making a granola parfait with some yogurt, some fresh berries, and some Bob's Red Mill granola.
Ooh, that sounds really good. Maybe I'll get some so we can make that at Cherry Bomb HQ this week.
That's not a bad idea. And if you order bobsredmill.com, be sure to use the code CHERRYBOMB25 at checkout for 25% off your order.
What a deal.
I have so many questions for you. So what are some things you've learned as business owners over the past few years that you just didn't know?
I think that at the beginning, Dane and I were focused on top line, top line, top line. And then we realized...
Top line meaning?
I'm sorry, revenue.
No, that's okay.
Revenue coming in the door, right? And then we realized, you know...
Thank you.
Sure. Sorry.
Yeah.
then we realized, you know, it's bottom line game, right? It's if you make, just using round numbers, $1 million a year and you spend $999,000, it just didn't matter. So I think becoming really focused on the bottom line has been a big dynamic change for us as business owners.
And I would say another lesson that we learned is to grow your business doesn't mean you have to open, you know, another 10 stores necessarily. You can grow your business from within. You have a platform and you have the arena where you can have new products. You can have, you know, we started selling our salad dressings and, you know, all of these things increase our top line, as Julie mentioned, which is also very good and very helpful, but also bringing new people in. And, you know, when we first open a location, we tend to be very busy at lunch. And breakfast is kind of, you know, the afterthought, or we have to, it's hard to change people's routines in the morning. So a matter of like capturing a breakfast crowd to fill our less busy hours. So all of these things are expansion of the business without actually opening more stores.
Yeah. And then I think the human element of, everyone says, isn't hiring the hardest? You know, isn't the turnover? We have over 90 employees or so now. And, you know, I think for us, really structuring things has been very important. What do we expect out of a GM? And we're still working on it. Every time we think we have it, we're not afraid to say, you know what, it isn't right. It isn't right yet. We definitely run our business as women. That has been a very challenging thing for Dana and I to embrace.
Tell me what that means.
It means it took us 5 years to take CEO titles to a company that we founded and own. I don't know what, it took us a while to find our voices and then to find the, at least for me, I don't mm-hmm. want to speak for you, although I love doing it, but I think
90% of the time it's okay.
Yeah, okay. This could be the 10. But I think for us, I had to come to terms with what I wasn't good at and then hire appropriately around me to support that, to hire people that were more powerful than I was in so many different ways, and understanding that I'm not great at X, Y, or Z. I'm not going to tell you what that is, obviously. But really understanding that and harnessing that, you know, we run our business really caring about the people. Now, whether that's female or male, I can't sit here and define that, but we are moms, we are female, and we do... Right? We nurture people. They have to do things horribly, horribly wrong for us to really get to that level of like, okay, we're done. And we don't necessarily always do that, you know, brilliantly, but this is our first time running a business. So we'll just have to write the book about it and, you know, reflect then.
Are you big enough to have someone doing HR?
We outsource our HR.
Okay.
I was just going to add to Julie's sentiment that, you know, it's very hard, I think, when you're in the thick of things to be reflective. And it's very challenging to admit when something isn't working and saying, you know what, we need a change here. We need to do something. And so it's not really different from what Julie's saying, but it's more of adding on to it that has been a challenge. You kind of say, okay, this is the plan. We're going to execute it. This is how it's going to work. And then it doesn't go as planned. And you have to kind of change course. And sometimes that can be very challenging.
Yeah. If you work with us, you just know that this is us learning as we go, and we're very transparent about that.
We haven't done this before.
Yeah,
so.
We're very authentic. We believe in, if we run our business that way, then when you come into the granola bar, you're going to feel that kind of genuine. There's almost like a naivete around it of like, we're just here to make you happy.
Yeah.
And outside of that, we want to run our business in a very, I don't want to say vulnerable, but it's almost vulnerable that we look around, we're like, we don't know, can someone help?
So how have you educated yourselves over the past few years? Have you had other mentors? Have you bought business books?
What have you done? A combination of those things, but a lot of it is we've just learned as you know. Trial and error. And I know that for me, there are times when I'm feeling very aggravated and kind of disenchanted from the whole process. And then I'll spend an afternoon in one of our stores and I'll say, oh, I get it. I know why we're doing this. It's so, because the day to day is so challenging. And, you know, yesterday we had our 1 year anniversary in Rye, yay. And we were in the store and a woman pulled us aside and she said, are you one of the owners? And I said, yes. And she said, oh, I just have to tell you. And I thought, oh boy, here we go.
I know, you never know.
You never know. It can go.
Are you the owner? It makes my heart stop.
Heart, totally. Yeah. And she said, this
place. I
say,
no, she is.
She said, this place is so wonderful and was so needed. And I didn't know that we needed it. And now that it's here, I don't know what I would do without it. And I used to drive to your Greenwich location. And then I went to your Armonk location. I couldn't wait for you to open in Rye. And I just want to tell you that you guys are doing such a wonderful job. And I just love it here. And you just need to hear that a couple times a week and you feel better about, you know, what you're doing because it can get lost.
Yeah, I think in terms of educating ourselves, we've, in the last 2 years, met some great people like yourself, and we went to that restaurant conference. We've really been in a bunker of work from 2013 to really 2017, and we did not come out to say hello. There's been a really pretty sizable shift just kind of having that great corporate crew that can hold things down a bit. We say it's the difference between working in our business and on our business. So we've tried to take that elevation to maybe 1,000 feet and come out and meet wonderful people. We've met, you know, Alice Elliott, and we've met Sandy Bell, and we've met people that have really sat with us and helped us. Even, you know, meeting investors and people that can tell us where we are on this path, because while we, you know, we think of ourselves now as a restaurant, like we have committed to that, but we do things non-traditionally and we're aware of that. And I think we'll continue to. But Dana and I are just realizing that, you know, coming out of the work is likely very important for our business. But we have not had really a single mentor. We really have learned this through work and making mistakes. And looking around and saying, I'm sorry, we didn't know. And we haven't done this perfectly, for sure. We've probably offended some people. Mm-hmm. We've probably hurt some people. We've probably, you know, made a bad bacon, egg, and cheese every now and again. But that's how we learn. And again, hiring people that have been in the business.
I want to talk about money. That's a very important thing to the
we
Bomb
don't know
Squad.
What that is.
Yeah.
An investment. Did you put all your own money into this, or did you take loans out? Do you have investors?
We started off by putting our own money in. So our first two locations was Julie and I. And then we took on some outside money at the beginning of 2017, and that helped with our rapid expansion over
so
the past year.
Investors versus a bank loan.
That's correct.
Okay.
It's an interesting subplot that we have not been able to get any loans from anyone.
And you tried?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Multiple times.
Multiple times.
Wow.
It's been interesting. You know,
not good for the ego.
Not good for the ego, not good for the feels, but we understand restaurants are very high risk. So, yeah. You know, we appreciated what we got when we got it, you know, because it was very high risk. Still, you know, there are still even restaurant investors that are scared of investing in restaurants. So
well, it's also been kind of a tumultuous time in the space. So I think that doesn't help our case.
Yeah, but we've done very well with what we've been given, and we're very appreciative because, you know, when we first set out to open the Granola Bar of Westport, we did go in our, you know, town and try to raise some capital, but it really looked quite scary, especially when, you know, we are still present in our family's lives. We are not, you know, putting hard lines down. And so it's been difficult.
So how did you two wind up at that finance conference that we did with
Davis
High? Wright Tremaine?
Alice Elliott.
Alice, okay.
Yes, Alice got us the invite.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Thank goodness.
I mean, we're going to a conference next week in the city, and I mean, we always learn so much, and we walk away so inspired, and there's nothing like hearing from other founders and, you know, the camaraderie of the highs and the lows and everything in between. It's so good. It's really good for the soul.
Yeah, and we're still a very small company, and we're able to pivot. And that's really exciting. Once you have 20, 30 stores, it's very hard to make little moves or big ones. But I think for us, you know, staying here for a while feels really comfortable. Kind of just like Dana said, you know, growing our brand and growing our company just from within this footprint feels much more authentic than, you know, building more stores right now. And that feels really good.
So you have salad dressing, you have granola.
We have some really delicious granola bars.
Well, we should.
Because we are the granola bar.
Yeah, yeah.
We have a paleo line of baked goods as well that's just quite popular. We have muffins and paleo cookies.
We're going to be working on kind of our interior consumer goods line that we can sell inside of our stores. We're always expanding that. We have a wonderful executive chef, Neil. He's always thinking about awesome, delicious items. And it's really working with him that also takes the, you know, the seed of ideas that Dana and I have that we feel the market loves, and he kind of expands on that. So yeah, we had
last week we said, oh, it would be great if we had some ice cream, and the next day there's an avocado lemon zest ice cream coming out of
it was delicious, yes, crying
fun.
Over it. Yeah, so it's really nice. But yeah, we've got this, you know, we've got a commissary in our Westport store that has all of its licenses and does actually,
we're no longer cooking out of our homes.
Yeah, does make, you know, thousands of granola bars a month, and and packaged granola.
We may have to bring the truck to the wing.
I know. We should bring the truck to the wing.
Do you have a truck?
We do.
Like a food truck?
Yeah.
Oh,
why
fun.
Wouldn't we, Carrie? Why wouldn't we do that, right?
Exactly. It's just... So you kind of have seven locations.
Yeah, exactly.
Yes, exactly. We threw that in during the crazy year.
Oh, my God. Well, you two are amazing. We could keep talking
for
a while.
We're amazing adjacent. Yeah.
You're amazing adjacent. I want to know how you take care of yourselves, because I'm doing such a shit job right now taking care of myself.
What are you talking
and
about?
You two,
what are you saying? You are glowing.
You're
sitting
skin
here
glowing
and you're
so
like, glow.
Because I ran here from Smith Canteen and hopped on the subway and it was like partially raining.
But you're glowing.
And
Dewey.
Dewey, yeah. It might be literally dewy.
Is she actually asking us how we take care of ourselves?
No, because you both smell so good.
Well, smelling like you Lalabo, walked, that's not a hard
you walked
thing.
Into the wing and I hugged you and you smelled so good.
Lalabo, but I won't tell you which one.
Lalabo, okay.
Yeah.
Okay, I do like that brand.
Yeah.
And I use Malin and Getz, the roll
smell good
on.
Because
really
I love those
afraid
too. They're so
of
nice.
What we actually smell like from the fear and the angst of our world. So we have to cover that up. A lot of cover up, wouldn't you say, Dean?
Yeah, we do.
Meaning
we do
concealer,
there's all kinds of cover ups. Yeah, there's under eye concealer. There's fragrance.
There's highlights. Single
process.
You do have good highlights.
Thank you. Yeah. A little Botox.
I'm going tomorrow, so you don't have to say anything.
You two are amazing. You two really are the bomb. I mean,
aww, thank you.
Thank you for having us.
A huge thank you to Julie and Dana. I had an absolute blast recording this episode with them at the Wing in Dumbo, and I can't wait to see what they do next. If you're ever in Connecticut or the Westchester area, be sure to visit the Granola Bar and tell them you're part of the Bomb Squad. Thank you to our sponsors, Vital Farms Pasture-Raised Eggs, Bob's Red Mill, and Le Cordon Bleu Culinary School. Thank you to our associate producer and resident riot girl, Jess Zeidman, and to the band Cha La La for our theme song. As I mentioned at the beginning of the episode, Cherry Bomb University starts tomorrow. We're kicking off this weekend-long event with a talk by Martha Stewart and Christina Tosi, who will both be receiving honorary doctorates. We're giving our first ever humanitarian award to Jessamine Rodriguez of Hot Bread Kitchen. Tickets can be found at cherrybomb.com. I can't wait to see all of you smart cookies in class and compare notes after. Radio Cherry Bomb is a joint production of Cherry Bomb Magazine and the Heritage Radio Network. Thanks for listening, everyone. You're the bomb.
I'll have what she's having.
My name is Emily Abramson, and I am the administrative assistant at Smith Canteen. And you know who I think is the bomb? Hannah Spiegelman of A Sweet History, because she makes ice creams inspired by history.
Thanks for listening to Heritage Radio Network, food radio supported by you. For our freshest content and to hear about exclusive events, subscribe to our newsletter. Enter your email at the bottom of our website, heritageradionetwork.org. Connect with us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at @heritage_radio. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization driving conversations to make the world a better, fairer, more delicious place. And we couldn't do it without support from listeners like you. Want to be a part of the food world's most innovative community? Rate the shows you like, tell your friends, and please join our community by becoming a member. Just click on the beating heart at the top right of our homepage. Thanks for listening.